Hi, my name is Gaia. I'm founder and CEO of Hale, and Femtech for me is really enabling access to gynecological care in the fastest way possible for all the 1 out of 4 women that suffer from chronic pelvic pain.
Welcome to Femtech Focus with Dr. Brittany Barreto, exploring the past, present, and future of women's health and wellness.
Welcome to the Femtech Focus podcast, brought to you by Fem Health Insights, the leaders in women's health, market research, and consulting. In this show, we have meaningful and provocative conversations with Fem Health experts. These academics, doctors, and innovators tell us about the past, present, and future of women's health and wellness. I'm your host, Dr. Brittany Barreto, and in today's episode, I interview Gaia Salizzoni, founder and CEO of Hale, a digital platform designed to help people living with genital pelvic pain, such as vulvodynia, and how to improve their quality of life. She founded Hale to break down the taboos of female pathologies and help close the gender pain gap. In this interview, we discuss what is vulvodynia, what are the treatments and stigmas that surround chronic genital pain in women, and we learn about the femtech landscape in Europe. This is a great opportunity to learn more about the future of chronic pelvic pain management and the EU femtech landscape. Enjoy the episode. Hey, Gaia, welcome to the show.
Hi, Brittany. Thanks a lot for hosting me here.
It is so great to have you. Where are you calling us from today?
I'm in Berlin, where we just had a hailstorm from nothing. So it's quite unfortunate, but that's where I live right now and where the company is as well.
Amazing. Are you German or where are you from?
No, I'm from Italy, which is part of the story, but we're actually based in Berlin as a company.
Yeah. All right. Well, then let's get into it. I want to know your story. Tell our listeners a little bit more about yourself and your background.
Sure. I've actually always been quite horizontal in my background and in my studying and then working career. I spent my whole studying life and early working life being in South America, then in the Netherlands, Spain, Italy, just studying what I liked, which was, I presume, kind of the impact space. So I've switched from politics and research to then kind of a master in management. So to the kind of the business, dark side of business and entrepreneurship. And there I really found my own way of doing impact. And I found my tangible way of doing so. And from there, I started working in startup and scale ups with no particular attachment to one industry in particular. So I've spent time in fintech, then food tech, then the energy sector. And I never could find a good reason to stay, kind of. And then I did find one when I met Health, which was not in the plans. I don't have any medical background, really. But I do have a patient history. And so let's say that out of my personal story, Hale kind of emerged first as a thought and then as a community and then as a product. And here we are today.
Oh my gosh. Wow. Well, you look way younger than a woman who's worked in almost every continent. why don't you tell our listeners what Hale is?
Absolutely. So Hale was born out, again, of a personal story of me and my co-founder. We just met again after a few years that we knew each other, and we just shared for the first time our personal stories of vulvodynia, vaginismus, and endometriosis. We were, for each other, the first person to hear and to talk out loud about this story. So it was quite of a big moment. And from there, we just realized how big the market was and how many women, other women, were suffering out of these conditions. And that's how we invented Hale. Let's say we created Hale to become the first virtual clinic for complex gynecological conditions. And again, when I talk about gynecological conditions, we started from the complex one, the chronic, often chronic ones, which are mostly endometriosis, vulvodynia, vaginismus, but also, of course, related to other kind of UTIs and STIs and more kind of generic kind of gynecological issues. And these conditions impact 1 woman out of 4. So they are quite frequent and quite disabling in the life of people from the physical, mental, but also sexual and work level, of course. And we really started building Hale out of a desire for a solution that we owned ourselves at the beginning.
As a business, it makes total sense to expand your offering to a lot of gynecological care. So when you do get a customer, right, they're able to access treatment for a wide range of things. But I'd love for us to focus on the genital pelvic pain area. I don't feel like we've talked enough about that on the FemTech Focus podcast. So let's dive a little bit deeper into that area. So you mentioned a condition called vulvodynia. What is vulvodynia?
So vulvodynia is a condition in the genitopelvic tract that impacts one woman out of seven, which is most probably a higher number of women suffer out of it. And it basically gives you a sensation of burning feeling when you sit on things or when your vulva gets into contact with any type of material, really, not to talk about penetration or any kind of penetration during a gynecological visit or during a sexual intercourse. So it's really a sensation of burning and of like some of the patients that feel it say it's like having needles in your vulva. So definitely not a good sensation. And that's pretty dramatic. It gets really bad when it's connected to nerves. So it's not just anymore a matter of dermatological issue, not just a matter of kind of muscular muscles issues, but really in terms of nerves. So when it connects to other things in your body and other parts of your pelvic floor area, then it can get worse. And that's exactly where we have to stop it before it gets chronic or worse.
Do we know what causes vulvodynia?
That's a good question. And I would say that for vulvodynia and for many other conditions in the women's health space, we don't have all the answers yet. So definitely you do have kind of muscles origination. You have nerves kind of causes, as like nerval causes. But definitely it's multifactorial. So it really depends on the personal story, on the past that the person had on a both physical and mental level.
Is it something that someone is like, you know, born with and they forever have pain, or is it something that could start later on in life?
Again, it depends so much on both things. So it can start from not really from birth, but from early on. So we have some customers, some patients in our community that tell us that since they were six, they have vulvodynia, which is crazy if you think about it. And it's crazy that it wasn't really caught in time and it developed into a much worse condition. But also it happens that it evolves, I don't know, from 25 years old or in your 30s. So it really depends, again, because it depends not just on physical conditions or on the sports you've done, but sometimes also on kind of more psychological or traumas, events that you've had in your life. And in terms of kind of duration, when we say chronic, whenever it is vulvodynia or other similar conditions, we don't mean forever necessarily, but it means from 3 months on. That's considered to be chronic from the scientific community, which means that not necessarily is forever, but definitely it's something that is, if it's not taken care of in a short time and in a consistent way as well, it can definitely last years. So statistics about that are very few, because not a lot of research has been conducted in that, but it can definitely last a lot. And what's most, I would say, really kind of staggering for us every time is listening to people and our own stories, actually, where we just had UTIs at the beginning, right? We have a simple inflammatory condition. We had a simple infection, which was not cured enough, which were not cured in time or with the right pharmaceutical approach or any approach, really. And then it evolved into this, which was totally preventable.
Got it. And what historically has been like the treatment for this?
That's another good question, actually. It's quite alarming if we look at history, because vulvodynia has been completely ignored and underserved for so long, as many other conditions in women's health, of course. But it has been treated in the first, let's say, in the past years, in the last years, mostly with pharmaceutical kind of treatment, which many times was about antidepressants. So it was really about trying to calm down your nerves and put everything under control, where not really impacting the causes, the root causes of the condition. So now we're switching to a model that is much more multidisciplinary, much more holistic, where physiotherapy has a huge role, even much more than the pharmaceutical component. Of course, pharma is a big part of it, especially when it gets to nerves, because you can't really do much else. But then you do have a very important side of treatment on the muscles, for instance, and that's what at least the latest guidelines suggest to do a lot.
Just if I can't imagine it, then I can't imagine other people not being able to picture it in their mind. So let me just go ahead and ask you, when you just said, you know, physiotherapy, I'm thinking, okay, but you're talking about the labia, right? Of the vulva that is painful. How would physiotherapy help that? Or what does that look like?
So you basically have to picture in your head a physiotherapist that is, of course, licensed in normal traditional physiotherapy, but then specialized into pelvic floor physiotherapy. And what she or he does is really inserting like fingers in your vagina, basically, and massaging it wherever you have your nodes and your trigger points, trying to release them in the same exact way they would do on your back, on your shoulders, on your neck. It's really the same thing. It's just internal this time. Can be outside as well. And of course, like they have to care a lot about your symptoms and your feelings at that moment. You'd never have to push this kind of treatment if it's not right for you. Of course, there are other kinds of things you can do beforehand, like using creams, again, pharmaceuticals, or other kind of treatment that are more kind of light or external. It really depends on which symptoms you have at the time being. But then physiotherapy, internal pelvic floor physiotherapy, is something that is extremely painful when it happens, but extremely, really useful in the long term.
Wow. This sounds like a condition that has so much psychological distress that's associated with it, whether it be getting a physician to believe you or even believing yourself, like wondering what's happening. And if you've never heard of anybody else having this, you're wondering what's happening to you. And then you find out the treatment is, you know, a healthcare professional, but nevertheless a stranger, inserting their fingers inside of you. Can you speak to a little bit of the psychological distress that vulvodynia can cause?
Absolutely. And I like to say that it's not just about vulvodynia. It definitely is true for vulvodynia, but all the conditions that we treat at Hale, for instance, again, vaginismus or just even hypertonic pelvic floor, they all share this common characteristic of having the highest percentage of people suffering as well of psychological disorders or psychological distress, let's say, either like during or even after kind of the treatment and the diagnosis, because you have first distress when looking for a diagnosis, right? Because you feel like you're not normal, like you're broken, you don't function as a normal woman. That's what they say, right? That's what we say. You don't understand why it's happening, how it's happening. Your gynecologist is not able to tell you why it's happening or if it's normal or not. Your mom doesn't know. Your boyfriend doesn't know. Your friends, like female friends, don't know. So it's really about, like, as you said, believing yourself until the end, until finding the good doctor, let's say, that really tells you why it's happening and what can you do about it. So that's, I believe that's the biggest part of it. And what we notice with Hale is that starting with a community often helps in femtech, but especially when it comes to this, because you just feel identified and recognized by others that feel the same. And that is not a cure, but is definitely something that helps your psychology at the very beginning. And then you definitely have a moment where you face the whole kind of medical equipe and doctors that have to touch you and assess your body without necessarily having been trained on how to do it in the best way, right? On a psychological level. Definitely there's a part there. And after, I would say there's also a big psychological component when you have to bring along your therapy, whether it is physiotherapy or pharma or nutrition or whatever it is. It's really a matter of being constant. If you can't solve it forever, you can definitely improve your well-being and your kind of relationship with this condition, but you can do it only if you're very much constant. And it's very annoying most of the time, because you have to do things that hurt you even though they're good for you, and you have to do them every day for months. And most of the people in our community just say that they just can't, because they're human, and most of the time they just, you know, tired from work or from studying, and they don't have the psychological readiness to do it again. It's definitely something to be considered when talking about these conditions.
Oh my goodness. you mentioned something that is very stereotypical femtech. So, you know, Hale has a great product and service, and I want to ask you about that in a second. But you just mentioned that you have this community, and I saw on your website you have a lot of educational content. So you're hitting the femtech trifecta: a great product, community, and education. So you are right par for the course for our industry. Why don't you tell our listeners how Hale works? How do you actually help women? What is the service?
Absolutely. Actually, we had quite of a journey as all startups in our history, let's say. So we started off as a community only, then we realized the need for a solution. We actually developed an app for educational and community kind of support, as you said, which was great to enter the market and, you know, to break down taboos and to try start educating the whole, people around us about this, and also like making people just, you know, realizing that what they felt was not normal and looking for solutions, and then getting to what we are today, which is, as I said before, a virtual clinic. So what we do is really guiding for the first time these kind of women into an end-to-end journey from symptom assessment to diagnostic fast track to then the choice among treatment options that can vary between, again, physiotherapy, nutrition, psychological support, sexual health support, and much more. And the idea there is really to have kind of a self-directed care where we have our clinical team online that guide you through the steps and suggest you what to do based on existing medical protocols, just in a digitalized version of it, and thus like more efficient in terms of times and costs. But then you are absolutely able and free to choose whatever is best for you and to really personalize your journey according to how you feel and to your data and to the suggestions you receive. So we really want to try to modernize gynecology in general, making it more accessible and linking directly a symptom and or a question you have to a solution, or at least a standardized process and protocol you can follow to get to this solution and to this answer. And in this way, like according to the data we have right now, we are able more or less to diminish by 20 times the time to diagnosis and by 7 times the costs associated to it. Because another big thing is really looking for a solution, it often requires money to be spent, but this money is not spent in the best way most of the times, because most of the times you don't find what you're looking for because of several reasons. So it's really also a matter of making it more accessible.
Gaia, if no one told you today, you are changing people's lives. You are.
That's what we need to do in femtech, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, what I find very interesting about femtech is that it often happens to be vocational, right? You've heard you've talked with, I don't know how many femtech founders, whether it was females or males, but still I find it very vocational. And oftentimes it comes from personal stories, like in our case. And that's not the case, because we just opened the Pandora box in the past 10 years, and now everything has to be built, everything has to be discovered and researched and linked. It's like, I don't know, building, like making fire in the modern age. It's like we have everything to be built from scratch, but we have more modern tool to do so. And so we can kind of leapfrog faster, in theory, what we want to build, which is quite interesting, I think.
That's a beautiful description of femtech, because a lot of times we are innovating from scratch, but luckily we live in a world of AI and understanding of genetics. I think back to like the 1950s, and they thought proteins were genetic code, right? They didn't know it was DNA that was the heritable thing. They thought it was protein. And I'm like, that was only the 1950s, really? You know? So we're already, have a deeper understanding of biology and the healthcare system. And, you know, also, women have just never had the privilege as they do today and ability to start companies and addressing conditions that they're experiencing. So you are amazing. Thank you for all you do. Amazing. Who can sign up for your service?
Actually, right now, we're only operating in Italy. So unluckily for all the others, we're not available in other languages and in other countries so far, but we're opening soon in other European countries. But still, of course, our website is in English as well. And we always have kind of waiting list for kind of foreigners. And so we're going to be happy to open the doors to more people very soon.
And now a quick word from our sponsors. Welcome to the FemTech Focus podcast, brought to you by Fem Health Insights, the leaders in women's health, market research, and consulting. Fem Health Insights offers a plethora of services aimed at propelling the FemTech industry forward. Our team of leading experts specializes in consulting and research, supporting clients across the globe to navigate the complex landscape of women's health innovation. We leverage our extensive database of FemTech companies, which is a powerful resource that is also available by subscription on our website for those looking to gain competitive insights or foster a deeper understanding of the FemTech industry. In addition to research services, Fem Health Insights takes pride in our vibrant community and mentorship programs, including the largest FemTech Slack community with specialized channels for job listings, networking, and city-specific meetups. Our mentor network, consisting of over 50 seasoned experts, stands ready to support your business endeavors from regulatory navigation to marketing strategy. Moreover, we're excited to offer our Deals newsletter and prestigious First in FemTech Awards. Our monthly Deals newsletter highlights 15 FemTech startup fundraisers, connecting them with investors ready to support women's health innovation. The First in FemTech Awards celebrate the achievements of those who have made significant contributions to advancing women's health. Now, here's where you come in. We invite you to subscribe to the FemTech Focus podcast and leave us a review. Your support and feedback are invaluable to us. Additionally, subscribe to the Fem Health Insights newsletter at femhealthinsights.com, where you'll receive weekly emails filled with the top stories, opportunities, and women's health innovation. This newsletter is your gateway to the FemTech world. Links to these resources and more can be found in the show notes. So let's dive into the show. On FemTech Focus, we have meaningful and provocative conversations with fem health experts from various fields. These academics, doctors, and innovators share their insights on the past, present, and future of women's health and wellness. Through their stories, we explore the challenges, breakthroughs, and innovations supporting the landscape of women's health. And now, back to the interview. Speaking of Italy, I would love for us to switch gears a little bit and talk a little bit about FemTech in the EU. So you are living in Berlin, but your company is operating in Italy. Can you give us a little context for why that is or how that is?
Absolutely. That's a question that I get often. Fair enough. We are Italian, me and my co-founder. We moved to Germany actually a couple of years ago after we quit our jobs to found Hail. And that was because we thought, okay, Germany is the biggest market in Europe. They are the most advanced in terms of digital health. They have the biggest funding. Berlin is the startup city in Europe. Why not move in there, right? It's going to be a success necessarily. But actually, spoiler, it wasn't. So we went... So we are living in Berlin because it is a very cool ecosystem to be in, very inspiring one, a lot of founders, a lot of investors. But then we moved back to Italy in terms of market as it was much more fertile for what we're building. And I think our story is quite symbolic when it comes to making startups in European healthcare, because Europe, as you know very well, is quite fragmented, right? So in terms of regulatory procedures, in terms of business models, meaning like who pays for what, and then also culturally, you do have differences, although it's quite the same within Europe. So you really have to fit your own value proposition and product to a very specific country, let's say, or at least set of conditions within one country or more countries. And that's what makes it, I think, quite fascinating on the one hand and super hard on the other hand, because in the States, of course, you do have your differences within all the states, but it can be considered and targeted as one unique market, whereas in Europe, you can't really consider it as such. You rather have to focus on a set of countries, a cluster of countries that maybe share common characteristics who need to fit your product, or better said, your product needs to fit those characteristics. So it's quite, of a job there.
Do you think that's why a lot of European countries will immediately just try to launch in the US versus Europe?
Yes, absolutely.
Yes.
Yes. Absolutely. No, really. I mean, if you are any startup founder in Europe, working in healthcare especially, because that's true also for other industries, but when it comes from healthcare, when it comes to healthcare, you have to consider that we have at least three different models of healthcare within Europe. So you have the free market kind of model, which is the United States one, where you basically pay for your own health. Health is considered to be a individual property and right. And so you have to pay for what you need. And then, of course, you have Medicaid and Medicare, but then it's really kind of a free model. And then in Europe, you have also the kind of so-called beverage model and the Bismarck model, which are the one, the first one is having one national healthcare system that provides access to healthcare to everyone. And the second one is having individual insurances that you can choose from yourself or your employer chooses from. So it's really about having a fragmented ecosystem, and one business model in one country doesn't really work in the other. Whereas if you go straight to the States, it doesn't necessarily mean that you nail it, but it's more probable that with one business model, you can just, get a very big market all at once. Mm-hmm. And the suggestion that we receive as startup founders here is really just go to the States whenever it doesn't work or it's starting not to work, which on the one hand, I totally see the point, because if you want your business to succeed, then you should look up for the best possible outcomes and best possible market. And also the biggest market in that sense to scale. But then on the other hand, if everyone is moving to the US, who's renovating Europe, right?
Yep.
And it's not just about ethics, it's about really business opportunities. I see a lot of disruptions still to be made in Europe, but nobody really cracked it yet.
Mm-hmm. Do you find that investors in Europe are more like, supportive of companies to just go ahead and try the US first versus trying Europe and seeing if it works? And if not, then they go to US. Do you find like some pressure, US pressure by European investors?
I think it really depends on your product. In our case, we definitely get this comment a lot because we are kind of an out-of-pocket self-payer market right now, which Europe is not really used for. What we believe is that in this specific market, awareness and demand are so high that people are already paying a lot to find solutions, and in fact are paying our solution as well quite easily. But then it is true that for most startups, out of pocket doesn't really work in Europe. I would say that UK investors, being so close to the States and also the dynamics within the market, do suggest it as like first thing. Maybe other European investors try to find a fit in Europe first, also because sometimes they have their own LPs and investors of the funds themselves being public investors who want to foster local businesses and local development.
Are you experiencing censorship issues with your product in the Italian market? I don't know how you're marketing it, but if it's direct to consumer, I presume you're doing like some social media or Meta or Google. We have a huge issue in the United States where women's health is wildly censored. It's, it's so sexualized that anything you promote about breasts or vulvas, it's like immediately considered pornography and is banned. And do you have that issue in Europe?
Actually, we do, because I hear a lot of founders facing this. We personally in Hale never faced it, I think, because we're always approaching it from a more medical space, like an gynecology space. We never, we try to avoid as much as possible words that could really be linked directly to pornography or similar, but it is definitely a thing here.
Yeah. What do you think are like some of the trends in femtech in Europe versus femtech in other places of the world? What are some things that stand out to you?
I think we are definitely copying the States a lot, unfortunately. So I would say that some trends are very similar to the ones you have. Even the virtual clinic model is something that exploded in the States before and then came to Europe, which I find actually quite fitting for the healthcare models that we have, but then a lot on microbiome, a lot on supplements as well. I would say maybe the bigger difference is that, I'm not sure about it, but that's a lot about research in biotech. So it's a lot focusing on biotech, both investments, new funds, and founders doing their own startups, which are there in the States, of course, a lot as well. But proportionally to the size of Europe and the number of entrepreneurs, I would say that's quite pushed in that sense.
One of the big issues we have in the United States is a lack of government funding for research in women's health. I have met a bunch of femtech founders from Europe that have had very good success with millions of dollars from their country's governments. What's your experience and opinion been like in terms of European governments supporting women's health innovation and research?
Yeah, no, I would say there's a lot going on right now. I'm not sure how it works in the States, but we right now have a lot of investments from both European Union and national states, mostly being, I would say, the UK, Germany and France, but also the Nordics and Spain are pushing a lot right now. So I would say there's a lot of funding within the innovation, like pure innovation and startup space. I'm not sure there is a lot on the most like rough data and research side of it, like within universities and research centers, which is actually what we should need, like in general, like at a world level. Before, like, you know, promoting innovations, we should base them on data, which we currently often don't have, right? Like I get to pitch sometimes and I'm like, I don't know this. I'm sure there is because we're collecting evidence, but I don't have the numbers because a study hasn't been done on this. Which is not happening in any other field right now. So I'm not sure about that, but definitely at the European level there's a lot going on.
What advice do you have for people in Europe who want to start a women's health company? Is there any advice you want to give them, any warnings or encouragements?
So I would say study the market, meaning studying really healthcare models, because getting back to what we said before, Europe has this characteristic of being highly fragmented on many levels. And so it makes it more complicated, but also like huge opportunities there. We're not just building new products, but we're really building new paradigms, because we have to face the product development phase, the validation phase, but also the business model fit with the healthcare models in one specific country. And what I think it's super useful as a new founder is really like understanding how dynamics works, like who pays for what, are there insurances, are there employer benefits that would work there? Because it's true that you have to start from the problem and you have to follow the user. That's absolutely true. But then when it comes to health, you could easily crash if you don't look already at who could pay for that, because in Europe, that's quite of a case. Other than that, I think there's so much to explore on the clinical trial facilitation, on menstrual blood data, on biotech, on microbiome, on even end-to-end aggregators. I think in the next 5 to 10 years, we're going to see a lot of mergers and acquisitions in Europe and a lot of kind of consolidation, because right now we have hundreds, I think, of solutions popping up in every single country. So I think really like analyzing the market and the business model beforehand can really help you even shape the product and target already what you have as a customer target.
Well, Gaia, this has been such a fruitful conversation. Thank you so much for teaching me and our listeners about vulvodynia and Hale, and can't wait for you to expand across Europe and the US. I know there are many women, you know, as you said, 1 in 7, and that's, I mean, what was reported, so probably more. So we're really excited for Hale to be a huge success. Thank you for all your insights today. We really appreciate it.
Thanks a lot for having me. Thanks, Brittany.
Thank you for listening to my interview with Gaia Salizzani, founder and CEO of Hale. Learn more about how they're treating chronic gynecological conditions at halecommunity.com. That's H-A-L-E community.com. Okay, Fem fans, it's time to get engaged. If you love the show, then you'll definitely enjoy reading our weekly newsletter. Subscribe at femhealthinsights.com. While there, you can also join our virtual community, which has over 1,000 femtech founders, investors, and advisors you can get insights and feedback from. We have an active events calendar, jobs board, and much more. Please give our social channels for Femtech Focus and Fem Health Insights a follow. The links are in the show notes. And don't forget, sharing is caring. Send this show to a friend or colleague and keep innovating, because improving women's health and wellness improves everyone's health and wellness.